Welcome to SidePod Panel. This is the third episode of the second season and the first of this year to come directly after a race. Our host today is Journia, so please take it away.
Hey everyone, so good day, welcome to this episode of SidePod Panel. So, we have two teams today. We have Team Virgin F1 with Luki.
Hello.
And Mr. C.
Hello.
And on the other side, we have Team Braun GP with Gavin.
Afternoon? Sorry, not evening.
Alright, and Stephen Roy.
Hello.
Okay, just so that everyone knows, our mechanics are, I'll be giving out some questions and everyone will get a chance to answer them. And if Christine likes them, you'll hear this. And if they're particularly funny, you'll hear this. And if she does not like your answers, you'll hear this. And if you're taking too long, you'll hear this. Okay. Before I start with my questions, I want to introduce something new. I call it listener's voice. So I'm inviting everyone in the comments to think of a question or two they want our panelists to answer. I'll pick the best one and include it in my list of questions. This should be fun. All right. So while we're waiting for that, let's do our questions. Everyone watched the race. Everyone really happy. So let's do a quick fire question. First question is, in one word, describe how you were feeling after today's Grand Prix. Let's start with Luki.
Hungry.
I'm really tempted to ask why, but I just said one word. So we'll move on.
Awesome.
Mr. C?
Elated.
And Stephen Roy?
Stunned.
Wow.
Good healthy round of points.
Yeah. Easy round of points. I won't ask points for now. That was a very quick question. Second question is, who surprised you the most in today's Grand Prix? Tell me more about it. Start with Gavin.
My old mate Lewis, because he's been driving around on what looks like a ladder with cardboard boxes hanging off the back of it. Had an awful time in qualifying. Looks like it actually looked worse than the Ferrari of last year in terms of having a little grip and not being able to steer into the corners and so on. Qualifies 15th. Starts from the back because he's got no gearbox or whatever the problem was. And finishes 3rd. And to me, that's amazing. In a car that's so off the pace, to finish 3rd, no matter how you do it. Yeah, so that's a great surprise. A very nice surprise for me.
Right, and to think he was only like 7th, right? Or 6th with like 3 laps to go. That was quite the performance. Mr. C?
I'm going to go for Buemi because we have not cut him any slack all winter. The team brought a car out so close to the start of the season. What, they have something like 4 days of decent testing. And they didn't do a great job in qualifying compared to the sister team in the similar chassis. They haven't got their head around all of the components that put the car together yet. Despite all of that, despite a limited amount of running and spending most of the winter running in last year's Toro Rosso, Buemi managed to pull himself up into the points. And at one point, I think he was 4th, which was an amazing achievement. He basically did what Bourdais did last year, which is in the first race of the year, he just pulled something amazing out of the back. In this instance, he did benefit from the safety cars, but it wasn't a sneaky safety car bump like Bourdais had last year. He just drove very, very well. He was clean. He didn't get in anyone's way. Didn't cause any problems. Didn't knock anyone off the track. He raced a really good race from start to finish. And all respect to Buemi.
Yeah, actually, just wanted to add. Even Bourdais also did a Bourdais, and he also got up to 8th, scored a point this year. So good job for him. Stephen Roy?
I'm going to go for Barrichello and Brawn, and not for the obvious reason. The car we knew was going to be fast, we knew it was going to be competitive. The thing is, they're indestructible. They had contact with about 6 or 7 different cars. Several of them had to retire. And by the end of the race, the guy is still running competitive lap times. He'd knocked bits off the wing. According to the radio, he'd knocked bits off the back of the car as well. And nothing they seem to do to that car affects its performance. So Barrichello for still driving and keeping his head despite the fact that making a bad start and, you know, basically screwing it up. And the people who built the car for building such a solid car, which seems to perform regardless.
Good points, everyone. All right, Luki, go ahead.
I'm going to choose Jennison for mine because, all right, he started first and he was first the entire race, but he raced a consistent race. He did everything he had to do. He went out there, got the result, and he just stayed impressive the entire race for me. So, and as like Stephen said, the car was just in immaculate condition. It was fantastic. So, plus, pleased to see him win again. So for me, yeah, Jensen.
All right, Christine, scores?
At the end of that round, Team Virgin F1 have 3 points and Team Braun GP have 4. Journeyer has 1.
Right, okay. So we'll move on to the next question. There, if you notice, throughout the entire weekend, we had the stewards meeting every day. We had the diffusers on Friday. We had the Toyota on Saturday. And we had some with Truly today. So there were a lot of protests over a variety of things this weekend. So if you were Max, if you were the FIA, what changes would you make to improve this system? I'll start with Mr. C.
If I were Max, I think I'd be quite happy with this system as it is because it gives him a lot of power to change the results as he sees fit. I was amazed that Truly was penalized and Hamilton bumped up to third, to be honest with you, because that's a steward's decision going in favor of McLaren. I think the way the system works at the moment is exactly what Max wants, and if I were him and I thought like he did, I wouldn't change a single thing. That doesn't mean it doesn't need to be changed. I just don't think he has any intention of doing so.
The answer there, Stephen Roy.
I think that actually sums up the position from Max, that what Max wants to do is be able to control things, so he's happy with it as it is. I think one thing they need to do is give people defined responsibilities and let them get on with the job. I posted a comment earlier that in the IRL, had there been a situation like the Truly situation, the race director gets onto his team, tells them to go on the radio and tells the driver to give the position back, and the situation's resolved before the safety car disappears. They need to do the same thing with the technical rules. Give Charlie Whiting or whoever the power to say, that's legal, that's not legal. By all means, allow an appeal on it, but at least give the guy the power to make a definite statement as opposed to giving advice or clarifying advice or any other sort of wishy-washy version of it. Give somebody the power, let them make decisions.
Good point there, Stephen. Lukey?
One of the things that I would do is we've had so many different variations of rules now concerning safety cars, and today we had the safety car coasting around the track when the rest of the cars were going at full speed next to it, and I was at 7 o'clock in the morning. That's confusing enough as it is at any time of the day, let alone at 7 o'clock. But once again, I'm just confused by what the safety car was actually doing, just coasting around the track waiting for Jensen. Why, if the rules changed again or something, why did it come out once Jensen came out the pits? It's another area of the rules. They just need to sit down, simplify everything, and just give us a clear explanation of the safety car rules once again. And I know it's frustrating to hear it again, but that's just how the FIA, I suppose.
Right. And Gavin?
I'm not sure I would want to change anything because it'd be changed for the sake of changing the change that's just been changed. So...
what is that again?
It would be changed for the sake of changing the change that made the change.
I can't believe you said it twice.
So confused right now.
It sounds like a fancy racers team if ever I heard one.
Yeah. But I wonder if the rules have been changed, because today we saw Rubens Barrichello involved in 2 contentious incidents without penalty, and the safety car that seemed to wait to come out until after Jensen Button had been pitted, so he didn't get any disadvantage. I'm wondering if Max has had a quiet word in the steward's ear to keep the Braun in it, just so they could be there at the end anyway, not be cruelly robbed of any victory to take away from the fairy tale headline.
I noticed that too. I'll tell you what might be interesting. Do you think there is some kind of agreement that the FIA are just going to be a little bit more lenient, rather than last year they got criticised for you know, ruling to the letter of the law and going too far, whereas this time they just seem to be very lenient as to what they're trying to impose?
Oh, absolutely. That second incident with Barrichello where he hit Raikkonen, I think?
Raikkonen.
Yeah. Raikkonen. When he hit that, I mean, if that was Lewis Hamilton or McLaren, instant penalty. And it was interesting how nothing was said or done about it. And I don't even think Ferrari are complaining about the incident either, which is even more strange. So I guess Braun are getting cut a load of slack just to make sure that they can carry on. And the stewards are being lenient because they got way too much criticism and they don't want to go down that road again, especially when they're having a go at the new boys. It'd be like bullying the small kid or something.
I wouldn't say that it's just Brawner getting cut a lot of slack, because there was talk that Toyota should have been penalised for their infringement in qualifying. They should have been thrown out of the race. And all they did was get thrown to the back, and that didn't hurt them at all, because look where Trulli ended up. So did that, you know, was the penalty for Toyota more lenient than it could have been?
I think it's a bit more complicated. Toyota were just saying it was just a manufacturing fault, so I don't know. But what I would want to add is there was actually a lot of suspicion about what was happening with Braun, in addition to what happened with Barrichello and Raikkonen. If you notice, Jenson Button, he got to pit, and then right after he pit, the safety car came out. And there were a lot of tongues wagging about that. I mean, why it took them a lap longer than it normally would. I mean, Nakajima was already there for a whole lap.
That's why it confused me, see?
Yeah, I thought that was a bit suspicious as well, because, I mean, as soon as it happened, the comments were full of people saying safety car has to come out for this. Brundle said the safety car had to come out. Everyone saw it had to be instant apart from the FIA.
Right. It came out a lap late and it went back in a lap late. So very weird stuff from the safety car today. Anyway, has anyone else not answered this question? I lost my count. I lost my count. I think everyone
title,
has answered it.
Title.
Right then. Christine, the scores?
Okay, the scores at the end of that round. Virgin F1 have 5, Braun GP have 7, and Journea still has 1.
It'll be a low-scoring round. There's only 4 of us, 4 of you guys today. So,
well, how many points can you get for one word?
1. Don't worry, there are extra questions to make up for that. Okay, next. One thing, we were talking about all winter. Ugly, ugly cars. Absolutely ugly, horrendous cars. So today we've finally seen them in action. Reason why they were so ugly was to make better racing. What are your initial thoughts on the ugly car regulations? Do they work or not? Let's start with Stephen Roy.
I think it's probably too early to say whether the rules are going to make a big difference in terms of overtaking or not. Today was such a mixed up race. There's so many people in positions they're not familiar with. We also had the problem where a lot of the overtaking was due to people being on soft tyres, which, you know, lasted 7 or 8 minutes before they were absolute garbage. So someone like Rosberg put in an absolutely fabulous drive, deserved to be, you know, third or fourth at worst. And then at the end of the race, the guy was miles off the pace and people were sailing past him like he was driving some sort of Formula Ford car. So I think we need to give it a bit of time yet before we see the effect of the changes. One thing that will be interesting is next week we go to Malaysia, where you get 2 very long straights. So all of a sudden the KERS cars are going to have a much bigger advantage at the park, where you don't really have a particularly very long straight. You've got a lot more bends. So it may be that the KERS cars will have more an advantage in relation to the cars with the double-deck diffusers. So I think we need to see 3 or 4 circuits to see how the various different bits of advantage people have play out, and who gets an advantage where. So I think it's going to be interesting from that point of view. But the bottom line is, I still think the cars are too ugly. Cheap point.
Some things don't change then. Lukey?
I'm on the very small minority side that actually really likes the cars this year. Oh, well, I'm not going to answer you now then. But I just like the shape of the cars. Aren't they beautiful? Aren't they absolutely stunning cars? Some of them are... All right, some of the liveries are god awful. Not naming any names, but Renault. But and now we're even. But I do really like the cars, and concerning the stuff like Kurs, and we saw with Hamilton today. I thought Hamilton used Kurs so well today at times, where he just had so much pace from a car that's just basically so slow it's going backwards at times. But I think as the season goes on, we'll slowly get used to Kurs into the races, and like Stephen said next week, we might get a better idea of how they're going to be used on long straights and whatnot. So, yeah, I enjoyed today. I enjoyed how the new rules affected the cars.
Gavin?
I think it's too early to tell whether all the rules have worked, because Australia's always crazy mental and weird random things happen. Like last year, Williams got on the podium and then did badly for the rest of the year until Singapore or so. What I noticed today... Because works and doesn't work. It works in the way that it gives you the power boost, which really does make a difference, but it doesn't work in a way that it seems to have unsettled and upset the balance of all the cars that it's in to the point where they're not as fast as the other cars. And a good case in point was BMW, because Kubica was faster than Heidfeld, and Kubica didn't have the KERS and Heidfeld did. But something else I noticed was, I don't know if it's going to produce more overtaking, but the way these new wings are, you can see that the drivers are able to use more lines on the track and more of the track width rather than follow each other around. So perhaps we might see more overtaking with these new wings, but they're still damn ugly.
Right. And Mr. C?
Yes, I do think, despite all of our reservations, the outlook looks bright for this year. Because if you disregard the fact that there's a huge loophole in the regulations, that means a certain number of teams have an advantage over everybody else. That bit aside, which I think is probably the only thing they've got wrong, what you see is cars running closer together more often. How many battles were there down the field towards the end of the race? Now, you could say, okay, it was safety car, and the fact they bunched up the field on two occasions basically made sure the racing was close. But we had racing almost to the last lap. We had nose-to-tail battles throughout the field, and because the leader was so far in front at times, there was nothing going on up the front of the race, so we were seeing more of the rear of the field going nose-to-tail, but I thought what we saw was much better. We didn't see that much more overtaking. What we did see was KERS used defensively, in a particular case, Alonso defending against Glock, I think it was, every time the guy got close, he just pulled away with the KERS button. And which may actually reduce overtaking. We might find it has the reverse effect. But from what I've seen so far, I like it.
On watching the race for the third time, I heard Glock say on his radio, "I can't get past Alonso because he's got the KERS."
Yeah, that's the bit I'm referring to. Which I like the idea that, you know, it can be used in two ways. It can be used to overtake. It could be pushed to pass, but it's also pushed to defend. And when you haven't got a fast car, but you have got track position, you can use it to your advantage.
Right. Good thoughts, everyone. Christine, your scores?
At the end of that round, Team Virgin F1 have 7, Team Braun GP have 11, and Journia has 2.
Great. Okay, so we're getting down to the last few questions. So I'll start first. We still don't have enough for the listener's voice to choose from, so I'll start with the research question first. So the research question I gave out, I think it was Tuesday, right, was, what do you think has been the most influential rules change F1 has ever seen and why? So this covers the entire stretch of the Formula One World Championship of them apply. So which has been the most influential rules change?
At this point in time, I might have regretted not reading that when you asked.
Well, and you're not going first.
I know who the last person to answer this question should be as well. Because I know the person who possibly knows the most about all the rule changes that ever happened in the history of Formula One ever.
I don't even know what I was doing this morning.
Oh, right.
Can I say, okay, as soon as I read this question on the wiki, I loved it. I thought it was a brilliant question.
As soon as I read the question, I thought, oh, I hope Stephen Roy's not on the panel this week.
or you hope you're on his team.
Yeah. I'm on his team, right. Aren't I? Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I got inspired with the ugly car regulations question, so I thought might as well take it to the next stage and ask that question too. So let's start with Lukey.
Oh, no. I'm just thinking of stuff like safety we've had in the past 10, 15 years, really. But they're progressively adding more safety to the cars. You can say that the safety has slowed down the cars. It's made it a less exciting sport to what you'd see about 20 years ago or something. But at the end of the day, the Formula One's far more safer than it was in the 80s and 70s. We've had far less deaths, which is obviously a fantastic thing. The last thing you want in Formula One is that. But I suppose I've asked myself in the past before about safety. Is it, for if you want a more exciting sport, if you want more speed from the cars, you know, is it worth every year adding more and more safety on? But I don't know. It's just, I suppose, oh, that's just out of my opinion, what the most important thing is in terms of regulations that's been added.
And, well, yeah, let's be fair. I mean, a lot of changes were made in 1994, 1995, and yet look at the racing we're still getting. I mean, in the last last two seasons, we've had championships decided in the final round, one decided in the final corner. So, I mean, the safety is good because it means the drivers can do what they really want to do. And yet at the same time, we get more entertained. And in bottom line, that's really what matters in the sport. So thanks for that, Luki. That was actually a very good answer. Gavin.
Very much.
I would say the most influential rule change will be the day that they banned ground effects. And the reason is basically because that was the day when the attitude of being able to do whatever you want to make the car go faster stopped, and the decisions were made to turn F1 into what it's become now, which is more of a spec series than an open formula. The definition of Formula 1 should be open innovation and being able to do whatever you want to make the car go fast. And the day that ground effects was banned was the first step in a long succession of things that got banned that have made the sport so tightly controlled that innovation's almost been stifled.
Just adding to what Gavin said, I remember there was an article, I don't remember what year it was, in F1 Racing, and they asked Sam Michael of Williams, if there were no rules whatsoever, what kind of car would you make? And the first thing that struck me was it was a ground effect car, almost the shape, almost like the shape of the 1982 car or 1983 car, I believe. And and they were really saying how would they take full advantage of ground effects, and the technology now they'd have in the wind tunnel would be absolutely fast. And I guess that's why going back, the changes were made for the purposes of safety.
Anyway, absolutely. The ultimate car would have been something like the Lotus 80, a wingless ground effect car with active suspension, ABS, a tiny turbo with thousands of horsepower, automatic everything, and the driver would have to wear a G-suit because he'd be doing about 10G around the corners at 300 miles an hour.
Exactly, right. Mr. C then?
I'm going to take two rules for my answer. Because they kind of go hand in hand, and I'm going to pick the change to a single tire per race rule, and then the change back the following year. And I think the reason that it was significant because it was probably one of the greenest things Formula One has ever done in its history, in terms of reducing the amount of rubber that gets made and transported around the world, gets bolted onto the cars and then discarded and sometimes recycled. It improved the racing that year after a number of years of dire deadlock in terms of who was winning and how often they were winning. So it made racing more exciting when it was changed. And almost immediately after they reverted the rule back to tire changes during a race, we basically went into a huge tire war, which ended up with one manufacturer leaving, and which now leaves us with the stupidity of the situation we have with the tires at the moment, green stripes included.
And the thing with the green stripes is it's almost impossible to see. I mean, how would you know? I mean, you'd only see it at the pit stops. Other than that, it's next to impossible to see. Well, I guess on the onboard, but
you can tell now very easily actually this year, because the car with the green stripes is the car that's going nowhere and getting passed by everybody else.
Yeah,
very good point there. Very good point. Okay, thank you for that, Mr. C. Now, Stephen Roy, I wonder what you have in mind.
I'm going political.
I'd have put money on that.
the most important rule change in the last 25 years is the one that allowed Max to stand for more than two terms. Because before that, the FIA president had to do two terms and then he was out. He changed that so that he was allowed to have as many terms as he likes, like his Ceausescu or something. I want to change the rule that allowed him to sell 100 years of commercial rights for 3 tubes of Smarties and a can of Vimto. Bad move. Bad, bad move. No other sport in history has ever sold off 100 years of commercial rights. Sell off 5-year blocks. They have an auction where everyone comes in and bids stupid money for them. He phones his mate and says, "We're going to sell 100 years of commercial rights and you're the only guy that can bid for them." And now he's going to. If you want to go technically, the first day someone turned up with a wing on the car, the guy should have told him, "This is a car race, it's not an aeroplane race, get them off of that." That way we wouldn't have all this aero nonsense and we could have proper racing. And another one, which, not really a rule change, but it would have been interesting to see the effect it would have had, because it would have stopped all the aero stuff as well. The first day someone turned up with an engine in the back of the car, it would be interesting to see what would have happened if they said, "Nope, can't have that, you must have the engine at the front." Because you put the engine at the front of the car, you can't have aerodynamic efficiency because you've got this great big lump of metal there screwing up all the aero.
I thought when Stephen said he was going political, he was finally announcing his candidacy for the FIA.
It sounded like he was giving his manifesto out.
If that was my manifesto to stand, there's no way they made the first point about banning more than two terms, because if I'm going in, I'm staying there.
Okay, scores.
At the end of that round, Team Virgin F1 have 14, Team Braun GP have 21, and Journey has 3.
Good, good, good. Okay, listeners' voice time then. So just give me your answer very quickly. Was the penalty given to Trulli after the race fair or not? And if you were a steward, what would you have decided? I will start with Gavin.
Unfair, because he made a mistake and should have given back the position, and the stewards seemed fit to penalise him 25 seconds. When, as Stephen said earlier, in another series, they would have just said, "Oi, Trulli, get behind Hamilton." That's all they should have done. 25 seconds behind a safety car is half the field. If it was a normal racing situation, would have lost one or two places. So I agree with giving him a penalty. I disagree with the severity, so I have to say it was unfair.
Right. Mr. C?
I don't know, because the FIA haven't posted the video as they promised to do. It was mentioned in the comments earlier that we're supposed to be able to see any video footage related to Stewart's decisions. I'm pretty sure that was a ruling that came in at some point between last season and this season as a response to the criticism at Spa. We haven't seen it. We cannot find any footage. So I don't know whether it was a good decision or a bad decision, because I don't know what I'd be ruling on.
Double manifesto. Score. Well, then the manifesto.
Stephen!
I'm tempted to say the same thing, but I guess if we're FIA stewards, we don't need the facts to make a decision. the only reason I would have penalised them the way they did is if they, you know, took some sort of ridiculous risk to get back past Hamilton. If it's just a case where he's cruised past them in the line behind the safety car, then put him back in fourth and that's an end of it. If he's gone and barged past him or something and forced Hamilton to take avoiding action, maybe there's a penalty in that. But without seeing it, it is very difficult, but it just seems ridiculously harsh.
Right, and Lukey?
I'm going to say unfair, because I like Trulli, and if the FIA are going to seem biased, then why can't I?
Yes. I like it.
That's a funny thing. I actually have a completely different opinion to all of you guys. I actually think it is a fair penalty to Trulli. I mean, rules are rules, and Trulli didn't do it during the race. It had to be settled in the steward's office, so I guess it's a fair punishment. And, well, it's nice to see some consistency from the stewards for once, that, you know, if something like this happens, it's a 25-second penalty. So I guess for me, it's a fair decision. Okay, two questions to go. Christine, the scores.
Okay, at the end of that round, Team Virgin F1 have 17 and Team Braun GP have 25. Journeyer has 4.
Right, okay. I asked you earlier if you all saw the BBC feed, and you all said you did. So, on a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being the highest, how do you rate their coverage this weekend? And if it's not a 5, what can they do to make it a 5? Let me start with... Where should I be starting?
I'll go first.
Losing count? Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Quite simply, the coverage was 5 for 5 pints of awesome. And I'll tell you why. from the first moment with that intro video, which sent every single hair on the back of my neck tingling, and then they had fantastic presenters, fantastic experts who see fit to argue with each other about the points, which is brilliant because I love that kind of discussion. The commentators are brilliant. We already have Martin Brundle. Ted Kravitz is in the pits. I mean, that's a ping right there. And...
And right on cue.
Lee McKenzie's already proved to be fantastic, and I didn't like Louise Goodman, so it's always better to have her. Jonathan Ledyard, he's come under a lot of criticism. Let's be fair, guys. He's off the radio, so he's got to make that transition to telly. I thought he was very good. Classic BBC, strong voice. Not too overexcited, like, for example, James Allen or John Hindor, who's the one who did the Sebring last week. Very good commentary, kept me informed and entertained. And the graphics were fantastic. The cameras are fantastic. And just as a point of reference, I've just watched the Danish coverage. They tried very hard. They can have a 5 for effort, but they can also have a 1 for standards, because the experts were Tom Christensen, who was okay. But their graphics were... Sorry to go on. The final point is their graphics were standing in front of an LCD screen and pointing up a map of the circuit. Not quite the same level as BBC, so...
Okay.
Presentation wise, I thought presentation was absolutely fantastic. The entire show, qualifying, pre practice one, free practice one, two, and three, even. The one thing that did annoy me was, and I don't want to go on about it, I don't want to rant him or anything, but Jonathan Ledger, I can't say his name.
Ledger, yeah.
That guy. But I need to get used to him, to be honest. And it haunts me to think that for a brief 5 minutes, I miss James Allen.
That must be a cry.
That's how much he annoyed me at one point. That is quite bad. So I don't want to be unfair on the guy because it's his first Grand Prix, and I know it's going to take a while to get into it, but I just need to get a bit more confidence with him. Oh, and Eddie Jordan was on there, so instant five for me.
I think any English commentator that follows after Murray Walker is doomed, because we've got this legend in Murray Walker, and anybody that walks in the shadow of a legend is always going to be worse. And I think that's the way Ledyard's going to be viewed. It's, oh, he's good, but maybe he's not the same as Murray Walker.
The thing is, we're not even comparing him to Murray Walker at this point. We're just comparing him to James Allen, and yeah, he's getting mixed reviews. And if we're just comparing him to James Allen, yeah. Anyway, it's still early days. Okay, Stephen Roy.
I'm going to give it 4 out of 5. On Ledyard, the strange thing about him is I don't really notice him. I take in the information he's given, but I don't really notice his voice, his personality, or anything. As soon as Brundle starts to speak, I realise Martin Brundle's speaking and someone else has been speaking before. But I don't, you know, there's no... If you asked me what his voice sounded like now, I couldn't tell you. I'm giving it 4 for a number of reasons. We've got this Braun car which stands out like a sore thumb. It has with green shapes. We do not need Eddie Jordan wearing a shirt like that blue. I mean, that's... And as if that wasn't bad enough, you get Coulthard standing next to him wearing a pink shirt and white trousers. Do BBC not have a fashion police anymore? The other thing that I think needs a little bit of work is these mob-handed interviews, because you get 3 of them standing there and they get 2 questions to ask someone and 3 of them there to ask it. They need to work on that. But I love the 3 of those guys wandering through the paddock or through the pits asking questions and working as a team, making Steve Ryder look like he's something from the 1950s. The bulk of the BBC coverage is good. It needs to be tweaked, and, you know, we shouldn't need sunglasses to watch it.
All right, and Mr. C.
3. There was a comment, I think, that Gavin picked up on, may have been in qualifying, where somebody said, I can't believe what I'm watching on Formula 1 now. Feels like I was watching Formula 1 kindergarten for these past years with ITV. It's such a step up. There's no question about it. It's much, much, much better than what we had last year. However, what we had last year was bloody diabolical. And therefore, comparing it to ITV is not worth comparing it to. What we should be comparing it to is what we want to see. And it still isn't as good as it could be. And I think they've made a mistake with Ledyard, because I do believe David Croft would do a much, much better job. At times, Ledyard sounded like he didn't actually know what was going on. It sounded like if Side Podcast did some commentary, that would be the kind of commentary we would give. I did like the ending. It wasn't, when Button crossed the line, it wasn't James Allen-esque. It wasn't overblown and over the top. He got his timing right, and that was good. I don't know if he's done enough research. He looked at times like a rabbit in a headlight, frightened about what was to come, as opposed to someone who was prepared and about to enjoy it. I think Crofty would have done a much better job. I do like Lee in the pits and Ted. That's a great combination. They work well. I love the bit at the end. The roundtable forum is just the best thing. Formula One needs that. It's perfect. So, good things, bad things. It still can be much, much better. And maybe by the end of the season, it will be what it should be and could be. It's a step in the right direction, but it just isn't quite there yet.
I think it's a bit unfair to say he didn't know what was going on. You got a team that didn't exist 2 months ago winning the race and finishing second. You got Sebastian Vettel and the second Red Bull team that's supposed to be no good this year up there as well. You got Rosberg and the Williams up there. The Ferraris are nowhere. The McLarens are nowhere.
But David Croft and Anthony Davidson did. And that's the difference. Partly because Anthony Davidson knew what to expect with Braun, because he had the experience. But between the two of those, who incidentally did a much better job than the CBBC channel, which was seriously mental, I have never heard anything so crazy in my life as the BBC channel. I cannot believe people are pouring money into that as opposed to anything else. It's just insane. I thought the Five Live commentary was better. The only thing the Five Live commentary doesn't have is Ted. And if they had Ted, it would be, for me, Five Live exclusive commentary. I like that we have the option. They have yet to get the best of all worlds.
Mr. C, so you actually prefer Anthony Davidson then over Martin Brundle, if the only thing you're missing is Ted Kravitz?
I like a driver, a reasonably current driver's insight. I thought David Coulthard did a pretty damn good job because he knows the cars inside out. He knows what the drivers are going through. I just get the feeling that Martin Brundle might have been out of the car for too long. Now that, I mean, he's not managing Coulthard, and presumably, obviously, he's still friends and he's still talking to them. He has driven a modern Formula One car. I just think Anthony Davidson recently has driven a modern Formula One car. He's going to be competitively racing, and he's not a journalist. It's not a journalist's point of view. It's a sportsman's point of view, and Brundle is now the journalist, and that's the difference.
I thought it was just relieving that we didn't have Lewis every 5 minutes as well. We had probably saw Lewis once or twice in the entire race, we'd go back to Lewis every 5 minutes on ITV, and it was just nice to have a...
There wasn't too much of John Button cam either. There was one or two shots of John Button, and that was it. And that's good, because we don't need to see what he thinks of it in the garage.
Last year, we had Anthony Hamilton just staring into our souls every 10... Yeah. It was like Lewis would come on camera, and then we would have Anthony Hamilton's reaction on the camera to it.
All right, Christine then. Scores?
The scores ahead of the final round, Team Virgin F1 have 25, Team Braun GP have 34, and Journia has 4.
Ooh, right. Okay, score widening up. So, final question. Everyone did their homework?
No. No.
Well, you can pick moments from today's race if you want. Doesn't really matter.
Phew.
Before I do ask the question, who wants to go first?
I want to go first.
Lukey? Okay, Lukey will go first then. Here's the thing, here's the question. You've thought of your favorite moment. Describe it to us in the way Murray Walker would describe
it. No!
You don't. Murray Walker is sacred. You don't desecrate the Murray. You don't.
Okay, okay.
You know when you said okay. First?
If you guys want leeway, you can use James Allen. Lukey then, ready?
Mama, mama, me, me, mama, mo. Right, you tell him.
He just did the Danish commentator.
And here comes, it's Jensen. Jensen Button comes around the last corner. He's got Barrichello just behind him in the safety car in front of them. And Jensen wins. We've got Rubin second. Trulli third. Hamilton fourth. So-and-so fifth. I forgot the rest. But Jensen has won the first Grand Prix of 2009. And I'm so happy. Are you happy, Martin?
Yes.
That's good, then. And thank you for joining us today in Australia 2009. I'm Murray Walker, and I've come out of retirement just for Side Podcast.
Wow. That was good. He even had Martin Brundle in it.
You've got to admit, that was a good Martin Brundle impression.
That was a dead on Martin Brundle impression. that set the bar pretty high now. Gavin?
Okay. And Ayrton Senna has won the European Grand Prix of 1993. That was a fantastic race. He's lapped the whole field. Oh, but what's this? He's stopping. He's stopping. He's got the flag caught in front of his rear wheel. And he stopped right in front of the fence. And look what's behind there. There's a 10-year-old boy. He's awestruck by the fact that Ayrton Senna is right in front. Yes, Murray. A fantastic race, and I bet that young boy is going to be extremely happy, and in a few years' time he's going to tell everyone on the internet about it. That was James Hunt, by the way.
Oh, yeah! Right. Right, okay. Mr. C, you ready then?
No, but okay, I'll give it a shot. I'm going to do today's win as well, in the style of James Allen, because I think we missed him, and I think he needs to come back. Have you seen Jensen Button out there? Have you seen Jensen with his yellow helmet? Look how much he looks like Senna. Look how that Senna, look how Senna-esque he is driving there. Let's have a look at Jensen Button's dad in the pits. How Senna-esque is Jensen Button's dad? Look at that yellow helmet with the yellow stripes on the car. Very Senna-esque. And Jensen Button crosses the line just like Senna would have.
Do you remember what he said when he, Jensen won the last race he won?
No. Not that, I imagine.
He said, and Jensen crosses the line and he wins. Get in there!
Son.
Right, Stephen Roy, you ready then?
Ready as he'll ever be. And Felipe Massa has won the world championship. He's cruising round the final, his lap of honour. He's waving to the crowd. The Ferrari mechanic's gone over to his father. He's punched the pit wall with joy. He's punching the stand. Isn't it fabulous? Massa's world champion. Murray, Lewis just overtook Block.
Actually, I also want to do my little bit here. I probably just do today's race as well, since it was just crazy. I'll do a James Allen one this time. Someone did James Allen a while ago, right? Mr. C, you did that, right? Yeah. So I'll do a slightly different version. Let's hope it works out then.
You're volunteering for this. You're very brave.
This is one of those, you know, all or nothing things. It's either going to work out brilliantly or it's going to end total disaster. And Jensen Button, with three turns to go, he's turning right, turning left, and Rubens Barrichello almost just behind him, and Jensen Button! Wins the Australian Get in there! Right, let's wrap this thing up. Christine, the scores.
Okay, the final scores. Team Virgin F1 have 37, Team Braun GP have 41, and Journeyer has 10.
Journeyer needs more points than that. For that effort.
Got pretty close at the end. Thank you very much, guys. Had an awesome, awesome time. It was an absolute pleasure hosting this panel. Hope I get the chance to do it again in the future.
Journey, you've been a legend. I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Yeah, certainly enjoyed it.
Thank you very much, guys. It looks like we're going to have a brilliant season on our hands. Let's just enjoy it.